This podcast is sponsored by Monarch Money. Are you saving to reach your financial goals? Reaching those goals isn't just about getting more money, but by managing what you have. And the best way to manage your money? Monarch Money. Monarch Money is a new kind of finance app that's intuitive, powerful, ad-free, and takes the headaches out of budgeting. Try it free when you go to monarchmoney.com/podcast. Monarch puts all your accounts, investments, transactions, and finances at your fingertips. With a complete view of your finances, you'll gain insights on your spending and find new ways to save. Plus, Monarch lets you customize your dashboard, collaborate with your partner, set custom budgets and goals, and track your progress toward them. See why Mint users are turning to Monarch Money and loving it, and why the Wall Street Journal named Monarch Money the best budgeting app overall. Get a 30-day free trial when you go to monarchmoney.com/podcast. That's monarchmoney.com/podcast for your free trial. monarchmoney.com/podcast.
You're listening to a Mint podcast brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hi everyone, this is Shovik and welcome to the Mint TechCetera podcast. I cover technology for Mint, where we try to make boring tech sound cool for you and hope that we don't end up making cool tech sound boring. Tune in as we decode the latest from the world of technology in India and around the world every week. This episode is hosted by Prasid Banerjee. Over to you, Prasid.
Thanks a lot, Shavik. About a month ago, an Indian startup called River started delivering electric scooters to its customers. Now, their EVs, you may have seen on the news or online, they look somewhat different from regular electric scooters, and they're manufactured in Karnataka. Now, even before the company puts things in motion in its plants, it actually models them in a three-dimensional virtual environment. They create what is called a virtual twin of their products using the 3D experience platform from Dassault Systems. According to River, doing this has improved cost efficiency and helped them scale up from 2 users to 84 in just 2 years. They use the platform to rework fabrication and simplify the overall product lifecycle process for the company. But River is not the only one. It is actually among the latest in a whole host of small and large companies and even governments that are depending on virtual twins to increase factory efficiency, design more sustainable products, and do other things. While River does it for EVs in India, in Switzerland, the EPFL racing team actually designs racing cars using this platform. Now, virtual twins came into the conversation in the last couple of years for most of us. But why is everyone suddenly depending on these virtual twins? That's what we'll ask of Deepak Enji, the managing director, and Renuka Srinivasan, who's the sales director at Simulia India at Dassault Systems India. And they've both joined us for this episode. Thank you both for joining us on this episode.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Hey, hi, Prasid.
Hi. So let me start right at the top, right? I know last couple of years, laymen like us have been hearing about virtual twins, digital twins and all of that, mostly post-pandemic. But this technology is not exactly come up in the last couple of years, right? Dassault Systems has been working on it for much longer.
I mean, you're absolutely right, Prasid. Dassault Systems has been engaged and working with some of our key clients on this technology for some time quite some time now. As you rightly highlighted, pandemic might have actually helped to expedite certain things, but Dassault Systems has been one of the first to work with virtual technologies. The 3D experience platform itself was actually launched in the year 2012. Even prior to that, our applications, the CAD applications, the simulation applications were widely used for digital works. So now, based on 3D experience platform, obviously, post-pandemic, we saw a trend changing, particularly when we talk about India, if I have to restrict within India, right? So in pandemic, most of them have realized the importance of digitalization. While doing so, it's also helped most of the customers to think beyond their regular traditional work, which is more spending time towards research and development, innovation, sustainability. So these things have actually enhanced the usage of this technology. So net-net, yes, the virtual twin is not new, but post-pandemic and prior to pandemic, how it was and how it is now has actually increased a bit.
So why virtual twins? Are these sort of like, you know, we have heard of AI, we have last over the last decade, we have talked about analytics, AI, and all these other technologies. Has all of this sort of led us to what we are calling virtual twins today?
In a way, I should say yes. It's indeed a culmination of technology advancement. But if you look at traditionally what it used, like, you know, there were many applications and there are many applications even now also. So this the digital era is not something which is new, right? Most of the organizations started with basic usage of digital technology, maybe to design some of their 3D models, sometimes even for their quick interactions, whether it can be as simple as an email or any other form of communication which they used to have. So these things are obviously being used from many, many years. But over a period of time, what you might have seen is, like, you know, the technology advancement started to happen at each application level. I mean, the CAD application itself started to grow, started to kind of, like, you know, provide more and more insights on how those applications can actually help for their business processes. Now, in that context, it is becoming really, really important that we go to the next level. So, for example, if you talk about digital twins, digital twins were the 3D representations of physical objects or the systems which actually can help them to simulate some of the use cases, particularly associated to a part or a component. Now, with virtual twin, it's next level. This is something which actually help the real simulations in terms of assessing the entire complex environments. When I say, it's as simple as that. The technology sometimes was used for actually validating a product. Now there was a question on what equipments and what machines or what toolings were involved to do that. And there is one more element of how it was made and then who are all involved and then how it is getting consumed. So if I have to elaborate a bit, the equipments is nothing but the machine or a shop floor or a line, what you talk about. And then how it is made is nothing but the process in which you involve, whether what type of material you use, what type of sustainability factors you are considering. Then who are all involved is nothing but your value network, whether it is a research center or your suppliers or the policymakers. And finally, how it is consumed. Consumed is nothing but your consumers. Now, if you have to have all these data points to help your business processes and simulate and see for the best results, obviously, the virtual twin technology will help. For example, whatever I just spoke about, right? All these things can be captured, definitely leveraging the data analytics part, AI and everything, and using 3D experience platform, you can simulate these aspects. Like for the first part, what I said, right? Equipment, we can call it as asset twin. How it is made, we can call it as process twin. And then obviously the execution part is nothing but operations twin. So that means the innovation is not restricted to a new product or a new idea which has been kind of inserted to create a product. It's more of how the innovation is happening at each stage. If I have to optimize my assembly line, that itself actually help you to leave less carbon footprint, save money. So that can be validated, that can be visualized and simulated using virtual twin. And that's how, like, you know, virtual twin experiences offer a range of benefits. So it's not only just helping with respect to time, but boosting productivity, product quality, and also reducing errors. And more importantly, you'll have a single source of truth for that.
So what I'm hearing here is that, you know, the overall use cases have just increased massively. And I'm guessing that's what has sort of led you to create the 3D Experience Forum as well. We're having the 17th edition this year. Is that how it goes?
No, I mean, you're absolutely right. The overall use cases have increased. As I said earlier also, it's not only with respect to product development. It's not only restricted to innovation at product development, right? The innovation can happen at multiple places, whether during the process, during assembly, during supplier interactions, optimizations, a lot. So that means the use cases have increased. And why it is increased? Because the demand and the requests are also like that. For example, if I have to go back earlier days when somebody wanted to buy a car or a two-wheeler, right? What as a consumer, they used to look at how strong or how sturdy my vehicle is going to be. Then gradually they started to talk about, while I have a sturdy vehicle, is it economical? Is it going to help me with consuming less fuel and also shell out less from my pocket? Then the next level which pitched in was, am I getting a right experience from this? So the style, the behavior, the look. So everything started coming in. So when these three elements were met, and with the current trend, most of the consumers are also looking at, while I have a sturdy vehicle, which is economical, and also I'm getting great experience, what kind of sustainable element which is going to come up? That is nothing but, what's the purpose? It's purpose driven. Like, you know, am I contributing back to the society? For example, am I leaving less carbon footprint? So that's the reason you started to see more electric vehicles, the new mobility, shared mobility. So these are things which are pitching in. So when you have these kind of challenging situations and which has to be continuous in terms of improvement, obviously the use cases will increase. And to simulate those use cases, virtual twin technology is something which is actually helping them to simulate much before even it actually gets into the manufacturing or the real world. Now, with all that, obviously the 3D experience from the 17th edition, you're going to see a lot on that. It's going to be a game changer, showing how 3D experience virtual twin technology can be leveraged for sustainability. And also it shows how virtual twin experiences can bridge the gap between digital and the real world. So this is something which is very, very important, and we see a lot happening in that.
Hmm. And yeah, I mean, speaking from experience, any new technology, technologies that sound new, at least to laymen like us, it's very important to sort of see real world examples on ground, right? And now that we're doing it, you know, next month we have the India edition. What do we expect from the India edition of the 3D Experience Forum?
I mean, I'll have to just add a bit before even actually talk about the India edition, how India as a country is actually moving ahead. So as we all know that we are on the right path when it comes to the economy, when it comes to the new product development happening across, the new innovation happening. This is giving a strong feeler that we are not just a country or mere just country which is going to just follow what it was developed and then being used by other countries. Now, most of our own customers here in India started to kind of think differently in terms of spending more on their research and development. So when we have these kind of examples, obviously in the forum, we are going to see a lot of use cases associated to that, a lot of presentations, interactions, meetings associated to how some of our key customers are leveraging this 3D experience technology. Now, at Dassault Systems, if I have to tell you, we cater three key major sectors, which is manufacturing, infrastructure, and life sciences. So these three sectors where we see a lot happening, and we believe in this 3D experience forum, some of our customers who are actually showcasing the technology, not only related to only design and validation, but how the value network is getting connected to an extent, how the data analytics can be leveraged and then work in line with what 3D experience can offer for their better decision making. So these are some of the things which has been kind of showcased there. Not to stop. Now today, it's becoming a startup world, right? And we can see a lot happening in that field. So people are coming out with new innovative ideas. Best of the best ideas are coming up with some young guys who are actually spending time to see how they can actually contribute, not only just a new product development, but as I said, the sustainability element, the competitive stuff. So everything put together, there are a lot happening on that. And we've been fortunate to contribute and support startups as well. We do see some action in and around startups. And obviously, this 3D Experience Forum will touch more and more on the sustainability part, because as you said, right, it's equally important what's new. What's new in the sense, it may not be new for Dassault Systems, but most of our customers are now trying to leverage this technology to support their sustainability goals. So when they have, it's equally important that we showcase how it can actually contribute to their ESG, to their sustainability goals, which is going to help them. So these are some of the things which will be showcased during 3D Experience Forum.
Got it. I think we should bring in Renuka here quickly. Some of the 3D Experience platforms use cases are in life sciences and surgical equipment. And I remember a few years back, I saw companies, you know, dabbling in holograms of human hearts and other organs, things like that. Is that a role that virtual twins play in, say, life sciences and healthcare and things like that?
No, I think, you know, I'm glad you could remember what we had discussed some time back. I think in the time between then and now, technology has advanced and what we are able to do is a lot more. So we are very excited about what we can do with virtual twins of humans. Like you spoke about with certain startups, like, for instance, Lucid Implants, we are able to take care of things like personalized medical care or personalized medical devices. You know, typically implants which are used, for instance, in India, are things which might have been designed for a different physiology, and then those get fitted into people. But today, with the technology that's available with virtual twins, and with the help of things like additive manufacturing or 3D printing, as perhaps it's more commonly known, it is possible to take maybe a scan of a particular individual, do some level of studies, design and simulation, and then create a personalized device within a short time frame, meeting all the safety and regulatory requirements. I think this is where we certainly see, for example, if I take the example of Lucid Implants, a startup which works on which works with patients who might need to have jaw reconstruction because of perhaps accident or certain health issues which have caused problems with their jaw. And rather than having a one-size-fits-all jaw, they are able to kind of automate the entire process where they're able to scan the person, bring that data into the 3D Experience platform, you know, create and design a jaw implant which would meet that particular patient, then check it for all the perhaps safety and operational loads that they need to look into, then use maybe 3D printing technology to print not just the jaw but also any kind of specialized or personalized surgical devices and tools that they might need for the surgery itself. And then, you know, go forward to the surgery. So there's a lot of pre-surgical planning as well as personalization that can take place. And I think this is one thing which perhaps we spoke about in the past, but which we see as reality being done today. So I think this is one example perhaps of virtual twins being used in life sciences. The other part, you, for instance, spoke about, you know, organs. So certainly the living heart, which is, adult male human heart that we had created a virtual creation of on the platform, is something which has, again, had a lot of advances. Many of our partners who work on the living heart have been utilizing it for different kinds of applications, whether you're looking at medical devices like putting maybe pacemaker leads into it, using it for educational cases, or even, for instance, if I take the example of Boston Health, they are actually looking at it with respect to the pediatric heart and using the living heart for maybe preoperative surgical studies, you know, pre-operation, looking at the study of what could be the options during surgery. So we are seeing an impact of these virtual twins where, again, you take a living heart, maybe morph it to the technology, you know, to how the patient's heart is, and then do your studies of how you might actually look at the surgery and study your options for surgery. This is one aspect that we certainly see people doing. And between then and now, we've advanced not just to living heart, but since then we've seen the brain project taking off extensively, people very interested in creating the brain, which is fairly complex. And of course, other areas getting other organs, for instance, interest in maybe lungs, interest in skin. These are other areas of organs where we see research going on, both within our organization and with many of the clients clients and partners that we actually work with. And in areas like, for instance, if I take the example of the Living Brain Project, in India, we have NIMHANS, which I think needs no introduction for the excellent work that they're doing in our country. One of the things that they deal with is schizophrenic patients who perhaps are not responding to regular treatment, which is available in the hospitals today. And so they get these patients referred to them. And one of the things that they have been doing, for instance, is studies of a transcranial direct current treatment that they apply, where they put external electrodes and then apply, you know, little direct waves to the brain. But it needs to be at certain locations of the brain, and they are able to use some of this technology to understand, and simulate how those waves will impact the correct location in the brain and the maybe the degree at which it needs to be given. This is something that they are able to study using technology like what we have on our 3D experience platform. So this is another area where we see a lot of interest with virtual twins with respect to organs. But it's not just about, you know, the organs itself. It's also about, I would say, two different aspects. One is the research and process, the trial process, and ultimately, of course, the manufacturing if you're looking at pharma. So if you take, you know, the importance of and the amount of regulatory oversight, very rightly so, into the whole drug discovery process, what we have with, for instance, our license to cure industry process experience is the opportunity to help these companies create a complete electronic record of their R&D process, of their manufacturing and quality control labs. And this really helps both in collaboration, eliminating any kind of data silos they have, but also serves as a record for later when they are getting into certain regulatory-related paperwork, for instance. And so in India, IPCA Labs, for instance, uses our One Lab Industry solution to overall improve the way their laboratory operational excellence is. And this is another example of the way that, virtual twins can actually help. In addition to this, you know, and I spoke a little bit about the drug discovery, I've spoken about medical devices, but of course, ultimately, anything that goes out to the field goes through a very rigorous clinical trial. And this can, of course, make or break the drug before it goes out. And we have, with our Medidata clinical cloud, supported over 25,000 trials. And this depth of knowledge that we have of, the trials, it helps create solutions to make the patient experience better for any kind of patient who shows up to do these clinical trials. It helps in designing. It helps people in designing their study itself. And it also helps, of course, again, in trying to analyze the data that you get out of this kind of clinical trial that you might take undertake. And therefore, you know, these kind of cloud solutions we have with our Medidata AI, allowing for clinical trial data on a unified platform, tied up with advanced analytics to make it easier and accelerate the insights that might come out of the data which is gathered. So this is another area that we see a lot of interest in, especially, you know, with the time that it takes to bring any of these kind of solutions to the market when there are so many patients who perhaps are in need of these kind of drugs.
You know, you mentioned like the Medidata, you know, the clinical cloud, you mentioned AI, and, you know, Deepak had also just mentioned how sort of virtual twins are a culmination of a bunch of technologies that we've been talking about over the past decade, right? AI, you know, analytics and so on. And I would assume that in life sciences, given that there is so much of, different aspects involved. There's policy, there is, you know, various patient data, hospitals. There are, I mean, so many stakeholders and so many different use cases. I would assume, like, it's a very good case study of how it is an evolution, right? How virtual twins are an evolution of everything that we've been talking about over the decade. And I was wondering if you could take us through that with these examples as well.
Sure. No, what you say is very true. And I will take maybe examples or talk about two things. Like you said about AI and ML, a lot of looking at the data which is collected. I mean, today with the kind of sensors, with the kind of, IoT devices we have, with the fact that patients could have wearable devices which monitor their health, various aspects of their health all the time, there's a lot of data that will come back. And it's just not possible for a human to really evaluate and look through those. And this is really where AI ML could play a part, right, in reviewing this kind of big data that might come back from, say, patient-specific behavior. That could be one area. But the other, for instance, is if you take just the amount of diagnosis that needs to be done. And a lot of this is maybe image-based diagnosis. And I think that is an area where we certainly see a lot of machine learning, where most of the time you could train them. You could train an AI to take a look at, you know, for instance, a lot of what we saw during COVID, where somebody looks at maybe a lung scan and is able to identify or detect that this person may be on a borderline for having COVID. So can we take a look, because it is able to scan through a variety of x-rays or a variety of other scans and then flag those which are clear, those which perhaps are negative, you know, positive, and is able to go through a vast quantity much, much faster than perhaps a human could. And in many cases, perhaps more accurately, though that still, you know, depends upon the training and the actual algorithms. But this is one area that we also see a lot of machine learning taking place with respect to diagnostics. Like I spoke earlier, with respect to the actual research based on the patient data that you get back. That's AIM. You were talking about, you know, even the testing. So one of the things that, for instance, happens is if you take today any kind of test, a lot of times is done on human bodies. And one of the ideas we have with these kind of virtual human organs is that a lot of that testing could perhaps be done on those virtual cohorts. So today, if you wanted to have, say, a cardiovascular device put in, you would perhaps have to test it on patients, but you also need a variety of patients, right? Patients of different sizes, different ages, genders. And then you need to understand how your device works in all these different cases. And that is why these trials are expensive, both in time, but also in, you know, cost. And what we are actually in the process of doing along with the FDA in the US is part of a 5-year study where we're trying to see for one particular area, at least, some of these kind of living heart, the living heart organ can, the living heart itself can be used to do this virtual testing of a cohort and see how that compares with what we're seeing physically and whether in future then in silico clinical trials can be used as long, and you know, that is sufficient to prove the safety and efficacy of the device which has been tested in silico. So of course, this is new area. This is, you know, fairly groundbreaking. We're in the midst of that process. But to us, this helps, you know, bring, you know, devices faster. And we're very excited about this kind of work that we are doing with the U.S. Food and Drug Administration.
You know, while we are on the subject of AI, there is, with AI, there is an expectation of also finding new things, right? And when it comes to things like clinical trials, drug discoveries, a lot of our goals are to find things that we don't know. There's a lot of unknown, right? So I'm curious how technology is fitting here. You know, how are we sort of finding new things, or, you know, where are we really leveraging this kind of technology?
No, thank you. And I think that's a very interesting question. We spoke about AI from other angles, like, you know, diagnosis, but it's very, very effective also to look at AI from how it's transforming the entire drug discovery process. So what we've really found is, you know, for instance, we have something called the generative therapeutics design, which is a cloud-based solution. And what this basically allows is, of course, collaboration between people in multiple locations, but you can actually, it learns from these real experiences, and then it explores the space. So perhaps it will be able to virtually screen multiple compounds that could, you know, end up being used for the drug itself. So it's able to explore these candidate compounds using certain machine learning models, and at the same time, some structure-based modeling and simulation methods. So these kind of optimization algorithms are built into the AI technology to allow the team to basically generate several compounds and then explore them and understand what would lead to, you know, a better solution. And so this is what ends up actually happening. Promising approaches include things like pharmacophore scoring, molecular docking, and other areas. With BioVia, we've had over 20 years of experience in supporting scientists in using some of these methods. And we have now put in some of that knowledge and learning into the generative design solutions that we actually bring to the market. And with these kind of things, what we're seeing is, you know, the drug discovery process itself takes a very, very long time. And with AIML, you can actually accelerate the time that it takes to discover new drugs. As you could perhaps see during COVID, when, you know, a vaccine coming to the market so soon was something in itself, quite a wonder.
Got it. Just to clarify, when you say, you know, generative design processes or, you know, this kind of AI, are we talking about what we understand as generative AI, or does it differ in this case?
So typically when we use the word generative design, what it means is, rather than perhaps a human putting it in, it is a science-based generation of design options, design alternatives. And so that's what we actually mean by when we do. So it is a science-based approach to looking at design. So that's what we're using here for generative design.
And just to add to what Renuka said, I want to bring a different element also, showcasing how the technology is leveraged across these sectors also. Like you heard Renuka talking about life sciences. I just want to add one more element to it. Some of the technology through our virtual twin 3D experience platform, we have been seeing good use cases across the sectors. For example, we have solutions like solutions for life sciences, where it's been meant for their the drug discovery, and then go deep into the molecular level and then actually simulate and see. We have seen these technology being used in the manufacturing. For example, again, most of our clients are looking at new material, new way, whether it can be, like, you know, done in a conventional way, or whether it can be done 3D printed. If it can be 3D printed, can I change my material properties, which is more sustainable? So when these kind of R&D or research and development happening, we started to leverage our technology across the solutions which was used for life sciences being very well leveraged by manufacturing companies, and the other way around. Most of the solutions which was actually leveraged heavily by aerospace and automotive customers, particularly in the manufacturing execution system and logistics, these things can be extended to our life science customers also. I just wanted to add a bit on what Renuka said.
No, that's interesting. And I think that's what it tells us, right? That this is all sort of going towards the future of computing. We keep hearing, you know, how quantum computers will come and we will sort of discover new chemicals, new drugs, which in turn will help us, you know, discover new drugs and so on. And, you know, on that note, let me ask you, What is sort of the future that you see with virtual twins? Where does all of this lead us eventually?
I should say the journey has started because the end goals are clear. Clear in terms of what as an organization each company wants to achieve. Because as I said, it's not a regular conventional way of building your products, right? So there has to be a continuous research and development should happen. Like today we may be talking about EV, electric vehicles, for example, and down the line we may talk about the hydrogen. And similarly, when we are talking about an alternate fuel, you have an entire ecosystem to be changed, right? It's not going to be the same set of suppliers, or even if the same set of suppliers are working, they need to change. They need to adapt to the new way of working. So when we see all these things, I should say the journey has started. The reason, because you have to be on the toes to innovate continuously. It is not something which is actually done for a year and then, okay, my product will run for next 10 years. We talk about many, many such projects, right? Today, I don't think even a cell phone has become a quick equipment which can be changed every year, right? Nobody used to think when we had landlines, if you get a landline, it was there forever. But now cell phones, the advancements, and similarly, many other products. So the changes are happening so fast because the demand and the consumer request is actually increasing day by day. So that will definitely lead most of the OEMs to think on how they want to be prepared for that. That's the reason I said, when you want to be like that, you can't start your product development, or you can't have the same life cycle of your new product development. So, if I have to talk about, there used to be a time where 24 to 28 months a company used to take to come out with a new variant of a vehicle. Or if I talk about aerospace industry, that the timeline, the entire product development cycle is very, very large. And even for that matter, the smallest of the smallest component or smallest of the smallest product also used to take some time. There was a defined timeline. Now, how do I cut short? How do I do multitasking? How do I simulate, or how do I look what kind of products I need to launch for 2025, 2026 in future? So these are the things which most of the companies are looking ahead. In this, obviously, it's equally important to simulate, virtually validate, and be ready with that. So this virtual twin technology, as I said, it's not only just helping them to build a robust product, but also it tells them that, hey, look, I am manufacturing a product with this current line, and next 2 years I'm seeing a demand, but post that I want to change my product to totally different one. So in that case, can I simulate and see how the plant layout, the current plant layout, can actually help me to produce the new product which I'm talking about? What kind of changes I need to make? So these are the elements which people started to simulate well in advance. Now that means, yes, in future we are going to see more and more adoption of this, no matter whether it is at MSME level or a OEM level or a tier one, tier two supplier, because everybody wants to work together. And we have been seeing a new trend, which is already started, and it's going to be important. It's going to make a massive change in future, is all connecting your entire value network. So that customers want their suppliers to be connected. They know that they're going to supply products on time for their assembly, but they also want to know that and in their initial R&D phase, is their suppliers are ready with right components which they can actually give them for doing right simulation. So that means your entire value network has to be connected. When we talk about suppliers, it's fine. Now, the next one I said, startups. Most of the OEMs today support a lot of startups. So they have to be on a platform where they can start seeing their value addition to their new product development. Similarly, academic institutions, and not to forget the policy makers. The government may come up with many, many such rules and regulations, right? How do you track? How do you monitor that? How do you associate to your product so that it's very easy to track and trace? So these are the things which is going to be very key, and the technology is actually looking at. So this is a shift, actually. And then obviously, I don't have to repeat, but it's very important. The shift towards technology is driving towards cloud and sustainability, right? So keeping these two things, definitely there is a big future for virtual twin technology.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, as I know that as people who deal with technology every day, we're supposed to be reasonable and there's sort of, you know, a very clear future path to this. But it's also sometimes very difficult to not imagine what we see in science fiction when you hear about technologies like this, where entire factories and cars and all are being modeled. But on that note, I know you are also strapped for time. So this has been a very, very interesting discussion, Deepak and Renuka. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Prasid. Pleasure. Thank you.
No, thank you. Thanks for the questions as well.
So there you have it. For the longest time, virtual twins have been considered a thing of science fiction. In fact, movies like Avengers show superheroes like Iron Man using them to craft advanced technologies already. Is that where we're headed? That's what we will keep talking about. We'll find out more in the next episode where we talk about their use cases in manufacturing and other things. This episode was brought to you by Dassault Systems, and we'll keep talking to them in the ones to come.
So that's that for this episode. We really hope that you enjoyed what we discussed. And if you have suggestions in terms of what more we can cover as part of our podcast, do let us know. You can catch me at Distant Vicinity on Twitter and at Shovik Das on Instagram. Thank you so much. See you next time.
To stay updated on this podcast, follow us at HD Smartcast on all the major social media platforms. To listen to more such podcasts, log on to www.hdsmartcast.com.